Welcome to Whiskey Cask, the cask strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 177 for December 14th, 2008. Coming up in a few minutes.
It was possible, perfectly legally, although not terribly reputable, if you will, to ship whiskey into Ireland, get a customs stamp on it, re-export it, and sell it as Irish whiskey. So this book is actually an early book about consumer protection.
That's Ian Buxton on the newest release in the Classic Expressions series of whiskey books. Truths About Whiskey dates back to 1878, when Ireland's whiskey distillers were fighting a battle with London over the regulation of whiskey. It was a battle they would go on to lose, and the start of the decline of Irish whiskey's heyday. Ian will explain in a few minutes, but first, let's look at the news. More End of the Year awards are being handed out. Let's start off with Whiskey Magazine's choice as the Independent Bottler of the Year. Duncan Taylor took top honors, and Mark Watt, who handles international sales for Duncan Taylor, couldn't be more pleased.
It was excellent. I mean, we weren't expecting it, because we got our individual awards during the day, and we didn't think we'd done that well as we'd done in previous years. But to be named overall Independent Bottle of the Year, we were very pleased. June said I can keep my job, so it's okay.
Needless to say, there are a bunch of new releases available from Duncan Taylor, but one is especially significant. Managing Director Ewan Shand's father was the distiller at Glendronach when Ewan was growing up.
Well, we've got a 33-year-old Glendronach, which is our three generations bottling, which is fairly unique. It was a 1975 Glendronach, which was actually distilled by Ewan's father. It was then, the cask was coopered by Ewan, and the cask was filled by Ewan. And then we had Ewan's son bottle it, so it's the three generations have all been involved with that bottling. So it's something pretty special, and it tastes super, real rich Glendronach style.
There's also a new series of malts in the Duncan Taylor range. The Peerless range features six single malts, each more than 40 years old, and will be sold by the case with a bottle of each single malt inside. The first case in the series includes 1968 bottlings from Glenfarclas, Macduff, Tamdhu, and Beaumont, along with a 1965 Tomatin and a 1966 bottling from what's described as an iconic Speyside distillery. The staff at the whiskey shop in the UK have picked their favorites for 2008. The Beaumont 12-year-old was named Best Single Malt, as well as the Best Islay Malt of the Year. The Auchentoshan 12-year-old was picked as Best Lowland Malt. Old Pulteney 12-year-old the Best Highland Malt. And the Benriach 16-year-old as the Best Premium Malt of the Year. Sheep Dip was named the Best Blended Malt. And the Famous Grouse the Best Blended Scotch of the Year. It's still not too late to send out Christmas cards, especially when they're as easy as sending an email. The folks at the Classic Malts have taken a specially commissioned series of paintings of the distilleries that make up Diageo's Classic Malts range and turned them into e-cards for the holidays. There's a link at the Whiskey Cast website. Back in September, I managed to hit about half of Kentucky's bourbon distilleries in one all-too-short vacation for an episode of Whiskey Cast. Next time, there's another one on the list to visit. The Barton Distillery in Bardstown has never been open to visitors in the past, but owner Constellation Brands decided to change that. The distillery produces 1792 Ridgemont Reserve and other bourbons, and master distiller Greg Davis is ready to welcome bourbon lovers.
We were the last one to open up our doors, allow everybody to come in and see our operations. And now, with the visitor center plan to start being constructed March 1 of 2009, we're really looking forward to it. We have started tours. It is a full-blown tour. You can see everything. It's a very nuts and bolts. We expose all areas of our operations, not just limited areas of the production facility, but all areas. So you really get to see how the bourbon is truly made.
And you guys are really the only active distillery right in downtown Bardstown anymore now, right?
That's correct. We are the only active distillery still distilling in Bardstown.
What can people expect to find when they come out to the distillery?
When they come out to visit us at Constellation Spirits, they can really expect to get a true hands-on approach. to how bourbon production really is made. There's no flash with our production. You know, we're not a bunch of cut and cover and polish here and there. I mean, we show all the exposed pipes, valves, different things like that. So if you're a gearhead, if you're into the nuts and bolts, you will absolutely love our facility. If you're looking for something that's got a lot of cover to it and just want to pick up the highlights, you won't enjoy our tour, because our tour is a walking tour, and you are encompassing a lot of steps and going up and down and traversing a lot of areas of production. So,
and you actually changed the name of the distillery with this too, right?
Tom Moore. We changed the name to Tom Moore. Tom Moore was our original founding father, dating back to 1879. So our facility is actually housed two distilleries and throughout the years, and our stills have only moved really about 100 yards from where they originally sat.
What else can you tell me about the history of the place?
The history of the facility, we have three different springs on site, still flowing today. The original Mattingly Moore spring, which is the oldest of all of them, that still flows today, as well as the original Tom Moore spring. The Mattingly Moore, we still have the cistern collection tank for where the spring water collected that they used for mashing and cutting the whiskey, and as well as the Tom Moore. Now, the Tom Moore site still flows into every batch of bourbon even today. It's a never-fail spring. It still has not stopped all these years, and if you think about it, the last 2 years we've had a drought in Kentucky, and it still flows today.
The Tom Moore Distillery is located in downtown Bardstown. It's about 45 minutes away from Louisville and just down the road from Heaven Hills Visitors Center, Maker's Mark in Loretto, and the Jim Beam Distillery in nearby Claremont. Now, visiting a distillery will give you a pretty good idea of how whiskey is made, but there's a lot of science behind it that's hard to explain in a tour. Serge Valentin of the Malt Maniacs tipped me and the other maniacs off this week to an article in the current edition of Chemistry World magazine. It's published by the UK's Royal Society of Chemistry, and writer Victoria Gill worked with the scientists at the Scotch Whisky Research Institute to explain the science of whisky in a format that even I was able to understand. And you have to keep in mind here that I spent most of a year in high school sleeping through chemistry class, so that means it's probably a pretty good explanation. I've posted a link for you to the web version of the article at the WhiskeyCast website. If you'll be in Belgium at the end of January, you might be able to help set a world record. The organizers of February's International Malt Whiskey Festival in Ghent are hoping to set a world record for the world's largest whiskey tasting on January 31st. They're hoping to gather more than 1,600 whiskey lovers for a mass tasting. There's a link for more details at the WhiskeyCast website. And time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. Whiskey Live New Delhi is set for January 17th. The Victoria Whiskey Festival is January 23rd through the 25th in Victoria, British Columbia. That same weekend is the monthly whiskey cruise on Sweden's Viking Line. The ship sails on a 24-hour cruise out of Stockholm, complete with a whiskey dinner and masterclass. You and Shand of Duncan Taylor will lead the masterclass on January's cruise, and cruises in the next few months will feature the McAllen and Highland Park, Diageo's Classic Malts, and the Chivas Brothers Range. Now, there's a wild turkey tasting with master distiller Jimmy Russell at Bourbon's Bistro in Louisville on January 26th. January 30th and February 1st are the dates for the Munich Whiskey Festival in Germany. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask.
Hi there, my name's John Campbell, Distillery Manager at Laphroaig Distillery. Become a friend of Laphroaig. Claim your own square foot of Islay at Laphroaig.com.
Many of the classic whiskey books of the past have been lost over time, unless you're lucky enough to find a copy in a rare bookstore. We last heard from Ian Buxton in July of 2007, when the second in the Classic Expressions series of vintage whiskey books was released. Ian's back now with another legend from the past.
We're going back to 1878, to the middle of the 19th century, when Irish whiskey, in particular Dublin whiskey, was way the leader of the world whiskey business. The biggest pot still distilleries in the world at that time were in Dublin. But there was a problem. At that time, it was possible, legally, but not very ethically, for Scotch whisky to be shipped to Ireland to get a customs stamp and then be re-exported back to Britain or around the world as Irish whisky. And that was causing the Irish distillers a huge problem. Plus, they were very opposed to blending and the introduction of grain whisky, which they called silent spirit or sham whisky. So, as part of a big campaign, they published this book.
And it's called Truths About Whisky, right?
It's called Truths About Whisky because the four main Dublin distillers, and in those days, there were two firms of Jamesons, John Jameson and Son and William Jamesons, John Power and Company, and George Rowe and Company, all distilling in Dublin on a massive scale, on a scale that would even be huge today, got together to educate the consumer, as they thought, and to lobby in Parliament, because at that time Ireland was still part of the United Kingdom. There was no Republic of Ireland at that time. To lobby against this false whisky and against what they saw as a fraud against the public. So there were questions asked in Parliament, there were newspaper articles, there were letters written to the papers and written to people, MPs, and there was this wonderful book, Truths About Whisky, and it was an attempt to educate the public as to what was going on.
And, of course, the viewpoint is from the Irish point of view, not the Scotch point of view, correct?
The viewpoint is totally from the standpoint of the Irish. They were very, very committed to pot still whisky, or single malt whisky, as we would call it today. They were huge operations. For example, George Rowe and Company, and, you know, we haven't heard of George Rowe and Company for this last 100 years. They've been out of business for a long, long time. But in those days, in 1878, George Rowe, in their Thomas Street distillery, were making around 2 million gallons, that's 9 million litres, of single malt whisky each year. And that's a huge distillery even today. And they were the world leaders. And the reason was that the quality of Irish whisky at that time was way in excess of Scotch whisky, largely because of the substantial scale of the operation. The small Scottish stills distilling on a much smaller scale, the whisky was more variable, it was more highly flavored, and Irish whisky had the name for quality in the world market. But as I say, it was possible, perfectly legally, although not terribly reputable, if you will, to ship whisky into Ireland, get a customs stamp on it, re-export it, and sell it as Irish whisky. So this book is actually an early book about consumer protection.
What happened eventually as a result of this book?
Well, nothing happened as a result of this book,
okay.
Which was the tragedy of the Irish distilling industry. They were trying to get the 1875 Adulteration of Food and Drugs Bill, which was a very important piece of early consumer legislation about protecting people against, as it says, adulteration of food and drugs. They were trying to get it amended so that this practice of shipping other whisky from England as well and from Scotland into Ireland and re-exporting it as Irish whisky, they were trying to get that stopped. They were also trying to stop the start of blending because they were vehemently opposed to grain whisky, silent spirit, sham whisky as they called it, being blended with their pot still whisky and sold. So they were very deeply committed to pot still or to single malt whisky. Unfortunately, they backed the wrong horse. Blending was gathering great momentum at that time. All the great Scottish firms were just getting started then. Dewar's and Walker and Haig and Buchanan were really just getting going. They were spreading out around the British Empire. And the Irish, as I say, backed the wrong horse. Single malt kind of fell into, it wasn't taken up in the way that blending was taken up, and blended whisky just became more popular. They didn't convince Parliament. They didn't manage to convince the public. People seemed to prefer to pay a little less money and get a blended whisky than pay the extra money for a Dublin pot still whisky. And this was the start. This was the seeds of the decline of the Irish whisky industry, which, of course, was a catastrophic decline from the middle of the 19th century.
And at one point, I know there were literally distilleries all over Ireland, and today we only have, I believe, three now working, right?
That's right. There were distilleries all over Ireland. In 1878, when this book was issued, there were 28 distillery companies. I don't know how many distilleries there were, you know, many, many more than that. There were 28 companies. By 1906, there were only four companies left, and as you rightly say, today there are just three working distilleries in the whole of the island of Ireland, and in the Irish Republic, which this concerns itself with just two. So their campaign went badly, badly wrong. They backed the wrong horse. They didn't understand that blending was going to be the way forward and that they had to embrace that change.
Now, for listeners who aren't quite familiar with the Classic Expressions series, explain what you've done here, because you've taken books like Truths About Whiskey and literally brought them back from oblivion.
That's right, Mark. Classic Expressions is a tiny little business, really, run by myself and a colleague called Neil Wilson. And we were both enthusiasts to collect rare whiskey books. We were trying to find some of the old books from the 18th and 19th century. And these are incredibly expensive now. You pay a lot of money to buy an original first edition of some of these books if you can find them. And we thought, wouldn't it be great if we could use today's advanced digital scanning technology to make a digital copy and then reproduce a complete, perfect facsimile of the first edition of these rare books. And what we thought then would be fun would be to have them in a limited edition of 300 in a nice slip case so that they look good in your library, and embracing today's technology, they come with a CD as well, which has a PDF file of the whole book, which is completely searchable. So it's an opportunity to delve back into history, to take that little window into history and look at what whiskey was like and what we were writing about and what we were thinking about 150 or so years ago. And this is the third book that we've brought out in the Classic Expressions series.
And the other two, let's go back and talk about those, because I think, if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, those are pretty much sold out now, right?
There are still a few left.
Okay.
What we do, we sell the first 75 copies out of the edition of 300. We sell the first 75 on subscription. And we ask people to subscribe in advance. They get a discount on the price, and they get their name printed in the front of the book in a roll of founding subscribers. And once we've got 75 orders, we're safe to go ahead and cover most of the print costs. That takes out most of the risk for Neil and I. We print the book, and then we have the remaining couple of hundred copies for sale. So we've got a few copies left of the first two books, and they're absolutely wonderful. We've got a book from 1914 by a man called Ian MacDonald called Smuggling in the Highlands. And Ian MacDonald was an excise man, and he writes about all the dodges that the smugglers got up to in the period coming up to the First World War. And that's a wonderful little book. Again, very, very rare. You would pay a couple of hundred pounds, I guess. That's, you know, today $300 to find a copy of that. By the way, this copy of Truths About Whiskey, I had to pay £750, whatever that is,
lots
of dollars, £750 to buy this book. And our other book goes back also to 1873. It's called Reminiscences of a Gauger, and that was a biography, autobiography by a man called Joseph Pacey, who, as the name suggests, was a gauger, an excise man, from the 1830s. And that's the only record we have of the day-to-day work of a gauger at that period. So again, absolutely fascinating if you're at all a student of whiskey history.
What's the next book in the series going to be?
Well, the next one is really exciting. There was a man who worked through the whole Victorian expansion of distilling in Scotland, through the great boom of the 1880s and 1890s when so many distilleries were built. And his name was Joseph Nettleton, and he was a consultant to many, many of the distilleries that were built in terms of their design and engineering. And he wrote an absolutely classic book, which is the reference work on distilling. It's called The Manufacture of Whiskey and Plain Spirit. And he wrote that towards the end of his life, when he wrote down absolutely everything he knew about distilling. And that was published in Aberdeen in Scotland in 1913. And for probably 40 or 50 years, it was the standard reference work. If you wanted to become a distiller, to open and run a distillery, this was the book that you turned to find out how to do it. This was the manual of how to do it. So if you want to find out about distilling in the Victorian period up till the First World War, you find a copy of Nettleton, The Manufacture of Whiskey, and that will cost you about £1,000. It's an extraordinarily rare and hard-to-find book. That's going to be our next one.
And you're looking for subscribers for that issue now, right?
We're looking for subscribers for that right now. We've got some information. We've got some shots of it on our website, and we're taking expressions of interest for the initial subscription for that. That's going to be a big book. It's about 600, 650 pages long. It's a large format book. It's very technical. Lots of illustrations, lots of plates and charts, lots of tables. But if you want to know how they really did it in the great Victorian period, how they did it up to First World War and really through into the 1930s, how whiskey was made, this was where you would go. So, yeah, we're gathering subscriptions, advance orders for that right now.
And how can people order the books?
It's all on the website. So we do. It's all web-based. So we have our website at classicexpressions.co.uk, all one word, classicexpressions.co.uk. You can order the three books which are out currently and pay by PayPal. Good old PayPal works for us. And you can pre-order our Nettleton and actually two rather lovely pamphlets, one by a man called Walter Gilby and another by our old friend Alfred Barnard.
It may be cutting it a bit close, but someone theoretically could order this and get it delivered in time for Christmas, depending on where they are, right?
Depending where they are, we would have it out to them next day. We have a shipping service. The books are all in a warehouse, a specialist distribution service. Within the UK and within Europe, I'd be pretty confident that they would get them by Christmas, depending when this program goes out. And for further afield, it's a pretty good chance you'll have it by Christmas. Certainly going to see it for the new year. But hey, Mark, you know, these books have waited for you for 100 years. They can wait for another couple of weeks.
And there's a link to the Classic Expressions website at the WhiskeyCast website. That's also where you'll find links for the other stories in this episode, along with the calendar of events, my whiskey ratings, the WhiskeyCast store, and a complete archive of past episodes. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. And my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com. You can also leave feedback at the WhiskeyCast page in the iTunes Music Store. And thanks to the listeners who've added comments there in the last couple of weeks. Next time around, we'll start a two-part series looking at a new and welcome development for whiskey lovers, the boom in micro-distillers and their unique handcrafted whiskeys. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2008, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.